and into the short spur of a hallway that ended at the men's room. After entering the men's room, he looked beneath the stalls and saw Chaz Smith's Italian loafers under the door at the far right. Otherwise, the room was empty. In a minute or two, the room would fill. The man in the blue suit moved quickly, picking up the large metal trash can next to the sink and placing it so that it blocked the exit. Then he called out, "Mr. Smith, I'm sorry to disturb you, but it's about your car." "What? Who is that?" "Your car, Mr. Smith. You left your lights on." The man in the blue suit removed his semi-auto 22 caliber Ruger from his jacket pocket, screwed on the suppressor. Then he took out a tan-colored plastic bag, the kind you get at the supermarket, and pulled the bag over his gun. Smith swore. Then the toilet flushed, and Smith opened the door. His gray hair was mussed, white powder rimmed his nostrils, and his face showed fierce indignation.
"You're sure it's my car?" he said.
"My wife will kill me if I'm not back in my seat for the finale."
"I'm really sorry to do this to your wife and child. Noelle played beautifully."
Smith looked puzzled. Then he knew. He dropped the vial of coke, and his hand dove under his jacket. Too late. The man in the blue suit lifted his bag-covered gun, pulled the trigger, and shot Chaz Smith twice between the eyes. A long second bloomed like a white flower in the blue-tiled room. Smith stared at his killer, his blue eyes wide open, two bullet holes in his forehead weeping blood, a look of disbelief frozen on his face. He was still on his feet, but his heart had stopped. Chaz Smith was dead, and he knew it. The shooter stared back at Smith, then reached out a hand and pushed him off his feet. The dead man fell into the stall, collapsing onto the seat, his head knocking once against the wall. It was a perfect setting for the late Chaz Smith. Dead on the toilet, a fitting last pose for this crud. He put the plastic bag containing the shell casings, the GSR, and the gun back into his jacket pocket and closed the stall door. Then he carried the trash can out of the men's room and put it down so that it blocked the door from the outside. That would hold people off for a while, make them think that the men's room was temporarily closed. The man in the blue suit heard a rush of sound. The auditorium doors had opened for the crowd. There was a fire alarm box on the wall next to a door marked Teacher's Lounge. Using his handkerchief to glove his hand, he opened the door to the box, lifted the hammer, broke the glass, and pulled the lever. The alarm bell shrilled. Then he walked directly into the thick of the crowd. The man went with the crowd, through the glass doors and out onto California Street. He kept going, turned onto a side street, past Chaz Smith's Ferrari, and unlocked his scarred SUV parked right behind it. A moment later, he cruised slowly past the school. All the good people, the kids and their parents, were facing the building, staring up at the roof, watching for smoke and flames. They didn't know it, but they were all safer now. Chaz Smith was only one of his targets. The media had started tracking this shooter's kills. Drug dealers, all of them. One of the papers had given him a nickname, and it had stuck. Now they all called him Revenge. Fire engines approached from 32nd Avenue, and the man called Revenge stepped on the gas. Not a good time to get stuck in a traffic jam. He had shopping to do before he went home to his family. Book 1, The House of Heads. The sun was still in bed when I parked my Explorer across the street from the Hall of Justice, home to the DA's office, the criminal court, and the Southern Division of the SFPD. I badged security, went through the metal detector, and headed across the empty garnet-colored marble lobby to the staircase, and from there to the homicide squad room on the fourth floor. Lieutenant Jackson Brady had called us together for an early meeting but hadn't said why. I'd been working for Brady for 10 months and it still felt wrong. Brady was a good cop. I'd seen him perform acts of bravery and maybe even heroism, but I didn't like his management style. My partner, Rich Conklin, looked up from his computer as I came through the gate. Our desks were pushed together at the front of the squad room so that we worked face to face.